Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
And welcome to the Multimedia Men podcast of Mediocrity. Oh yes, Mediocrity, where the show is just okay. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, subscribe to us. Please, Mediocrity. We are so much fun and so mediocre. I'm Brian Kluger with Boomstick Comics. I am with, well, why are you covering your face, Jonathan Atterbury?
Oh, I was just watching you do your thing, man. It was just, you know, pure awe.
It's pure awe. Well, thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. How about you?
Doing well. How's working out coming along? I mean, seeing your Instagram posts on New American Fitness, and it looks like you're just sweaty and bulgy. You look like a moose.
That's the goal, really. It's just how moose-like I can look.
Well, you're doing well, sir. And we, all, of course, always have our hilarious host, Jeremy Miggert. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How about you?
Doing well. Do you think your friend, Mr. Atterbury, is becoming more like a moose every day?
I don't know. That animal comparison never really occurred to me.
If you had to compare one animal to him, what would it be?
I will give him gorilla status. How about that?
Gorilla status.
Oh, nice.
Dang. And just for fun, what animal would you give me?
We'll stay in the same family. We'll go orangutan for you.
Cool. Kind of like the fun circus monkey, orangutan, prime, I don't know.
Yeah, kind of like Paul Giamatti in that super great Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie that you love so much.
Oh my God, do I love that movie? That's for another podcast, I feel like.
I thought you said that was your favorite.
Was that my favorite? I don't think so.
Pretty sure.
Well, I retract that statement then. But we're Mediocrity. We're having fun here. This week we have lots to talk about today. We're going to talk about, we've all seen Wonder Woman, and I know we talked, touched on Wonder Woman last week, but that's what she said. But we're going to touch on Wonder Woman again since Mr. Atterbury has seen it, and we're going to maybe dive deep into it and see what all the hoopla is about. Also, we're going to talk about the latest keynote of Apple, WWDC, some really weird, cool, fun things happening over in that area of entertainment and fun and nerd stuff. We're also going to talk about the new Dread TV series. We're going to talk about Kurt Russell. We've got a lot to talk about. But I guess since we're going to
start... And game soundtracks.
Oh, yeah, video game soundtracks. How can I forget video game soundtracks? Super fun. And I think one of our only fans, Mitchell Blumka, has texted me this past week on more Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson movies he'd like to see them to in, which is pretty funny. We might mention those at the end of the show, so stick around for that. But let's jump into Wonder Woman. So Jeremy and I saw Wonder Woman together. It made, what, $120 million opening weekend? Did pretty well. Pretty well. We both liked it. And we've got to ask Mr. Atterbury, who on this podcast of Mediocrity hates the DC Universe right now. So, Jeremy and I really want to know how your feelings are about Wonder Woman and the DC Cinematic Universe.
Oh, I loved it, man. I was totally, totally surprised by how much I enjoyed it.
So are you back into this DC Universe again?
No. One fucking good movie is not going to convince me to get back on the train of the whole universe. But Wonder Woman was awesome, and it certainly was a step in the right direction. Let's just see how shitty Justice League is.
So,
well, you're going to go see it, right?
No, I will. Well, okay, I'll take it back. I will wait And here, like with all these movies, I'll wait and let you guys go see it first, and then I'll make my judgment after your reactions.
All right. All right. So, I mean, well, let me put it to you this way. What if, so you liked Wonder Woman a whole lot.
Okay. Yes.
So if they go this direction, this new direction, you know, with like the brighter colors and like the humor, the general like good filmmaking and story and writing with it. If they do this with Justice League, are you going to be in, you're going to be back into the DC universe again?
Well, I think that if they put out two really damn good movies consecutively, I would be much less hesitant to go see a third one.
All right. So there's still no Marvel movies to you.
They have the potential to be, you know, when it was the Christian Bale Batman movies, each one of those coming out, I was like 100% all about it. And I was totally excited to get, you know, more Henry Cavill Superman after Man of Steel. But that was a big fucking fart in the mouth.
All right. All right.
But you've only seen one bad movie since Man of Steel.
Yeah, well, so I saw how bad. But, well, the thing about it is.
I just don't understand. If you've only seen one bad movie, how does one really good movie not neutralize that for you?
Man of Steel was good, but not fantastic. But then Batman vs. Superman was so bad. And then I haven't seen it yet because I heard it was a total stinker. Then the Suicide Squad movie was so terrible. I don't know.
You need to see Suicide Squad so you can form your own opinion. You might think it's the best movie in the world.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I am not a huge DC fan as is. I don't know that much about it all. I've never spent that much time reading. You know, my knowledge about DC is pretty much limited to what I've seen in the existing movies and some of the TV shows.
But
okay. I got something for you. Let's say after Wonder Woman, let's say Justice League is terrible.
Yep.
Let's say Aquaman is terrible. Let's say everything is terrible. Leading up to the Captain Marvel movie, which will have The Rock as Black Adam, will you go see that?
You mean the Shazam? Oh, isn't Captain Marvel the superhero in Marvel? I'm confused.
It's two characters with the same name, basically.
Okay, well, I will go see it if The Rock's in it, even though Baywatch sucked and kind of interfered with my commitment to seeing all of his movies. I will still go see it just to see him being a supervillain.
Well, okay.
Okay.
All right. So.
Long story short, though, Wonder Woman was fucking great. I loved it.
Okay, so tell us what you really liked about it.
Oh, I thought it was just, I loved the message of the whole movie. I loved that the character was able to be strong while also being kind and gentle and loving on all, but not just being those things, but Gal Gadot's performance really bled all of those things constantly. It was a really, really good multi-layered performance there, and not a one-dimensional character by any sense of the word.
So, I'm curious if you agree with me when I originally said that I thought the last 15-20 minutes of Wonder Woman just crashed into the mountain with the final fight scene.
Although I wouldn't say it crashed into the mountain, I did not like the last 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, the last 20 minutes, although there were a few really good parts, there were a few things in the last 15-20 minutes that I was like, okay, cool, I like that. But all in all, I did not like the fight scene, the big fight scene at the end. It was just way too Zack Snyder.
Okay, yeah.
And I also did not like the Matrix ending.
All right, all right. So, Jeremy, you've seen this more than once now?
I've seen it twice.
All right, second viewing. What are your thoughts?
Second viewing, you know, I didn't really pick up anything that I didn't like more. My only real complaint for the first movie was I didn't love, like, little kid Diana actress.
Okay.
Didn't care for her. And then my only, like, real complaint with the movie is, this will sound stupid, but it's when Ares, you know, kind of becomes and transforms, that guy's, like, mustache is just ridiculous.
Yes.
And I feel like when you're if you're going to sit down and design the God of War, at no point ever are you going to draw him or create him with just a mustache. the mustache of war was a little stupid, and it, like, to me, like, it loses its thing when you show the close-up of his face behind the helmet. I mean, like, if you're going to go Ares like that, then, you know, he needs to do a little more of a transformation and either have no mustache or have grown a full beard or something like that, because the mustache was kind of fucking stupid. But outside of that, like, the stuff I enjoyed more, like the No Man's Land scene when she's, like, you know, the little machine gun tank thing is shooting at her and it blows her shield away, and then she, like, rams shoulder first into it and flips it. Loved it.
Good, good. So second time was still good and still liked it.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, all right. And do you think you'll see this another time and another time and still enjoy?
Probably. I imagine when this movie comes out on Blu-ray, Josie will have it on almost permanent loop.
All right, so you both are, I would consider yourself both musicians as well as what you do in your day jobs. So, Jonathan, you seeing it, and Jeremy, you seeing it a second time. What did you think of the score? Did you still like the electric guitar Wonder Woman theme, or do you feel it kind of cheesy?
I never liked that the first time I heard it. I thought the electric guitar Wonder Woman theme sounds like something straight out of the X-Men animated series.
which I love.
I love that for what it fucking was, but I don't want it to be bleeding through into 2017 superhero movies necessarily. But I thought the score was, while it was appropriate, it was totally forgettable. Okay. You know, I literally can't hum any of the score to you.
Jeremy?
I see John's point about the 90s X-Men comparison. I kind of dig it. My biggest complaint about it is, with it being a World War One movie, I don't want to hear electric guitar in a World War One movie because it makes no sense.
Well, that was the same thing that happened in 300.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Heavy metal music.
I don't dig it in that respect. I do like, though, that she has a theme.
Yeah, and she should have a theme.
And I'm cool with that because, for me, it's the first DC movie character since, you know, who even knows how long, that has actually had a short little theme. You know, to me, it's like one of the only, the nice thing about it is, you know, there really are only two kind of modern superhero movie themes that I can think of off the top of my head. It's Wonder Woman, and then it's the little Captain America theme, which is kind of usually like just put on the little like tail end of a scene or, you know, something nostalgic. And so from that standpoint, I dig what it is. And I think it'll fit better in a modern Wonder Woman movie than it will, you know, in World War One.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was one of the things that also you mentioned, the time period, is that at no point during the World War One setting did the score reflect that time period to me. And I wish that it would have, because that was one of the things that was so cool about the Captain America, the first Avenger movie, is that soundtrack felt like World War II appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I liked that. So yeah. I wish that they had figured out some way to make that work and just have it be a more memorable score in all, not just the theme.
Yeah, I think if they could have kept the theme and just not had the electric guitar in it, and it probably would have come across better.
Yeah, it's not the notes of the theme that bother me. It's just the overall production of it.
The execution.
Yep.
All right, good, good. Now, I'm glad we all liked it. I'm definitely curious about the Blu-ray or 4K coming out, what extras will be on there and all sorts of things. And sure, we'll get a sequel because, I mean, this movie did make quite a bit of money at the box office. So in addition to Wonder Woman, before Wonder Woman was released, Alamo Drafthouse and several other theaters were holding women-only screenings, and more than several dudes got pissed off about that and did a big deal about it. Do you think this is I get that it's like female empowerment, but I didn't think it was like preachy that way or anything. I just thought it was like for everybody, and like I felt really good for, you know, a lot of women, young women, old women that finally got a big superhero movie for themselves that has a shining star of a woman in the lead. What do you think?
Well, I think that I don't really give a shit if Alamo Drafthouse wants to have a women-only viewing. Yeah, I think that people are just looking for something to be offended about, and that's exactly what they found in this. You know, I mean, if you know, Alamo Drafthouse isn't a government service. They don't have to do anything we want them to do. If they want to have it for just women, then that's cool. I'm totally up for that. You know, I don't care. So that's how I feel about that. But I thought the movie was great. It had a fantastic message that could be taken from anybody. It doesn't have to be just for women, you know. It was empowering, I think, for humans in general, and I like that. And yeah, I think it's fantastic that it was the first time we've really seen a movie where the female lead isn't like sexualized or objectified in a stupid way like we see so often. So I think that was really cool.
Agreed. Jeremy, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree, man. I have no problem with those. You know, to me, I think it's awesome that they were doing the, you know, basically what is the equivalent of a ladies' night screening, because any other place, a bar, whatever, could have a ladies' night, and these dudes aren't crying about it. And, you know, I saw a lot of these a lot of people whining, being like, oh, but it's so hard. It's hard to get tickets, and they're going to – and we can't get tickets to this. And it's like, no. It's like there's nothing hard – about buying tickets on the internet. It's like, if that is these dudes' definition of hard, then I congratulate them on having absolutely no real problems whatsoever
in life. Yeah. Well said, sir. Well said. No, I totally agree with all that.
I agree with John, man. There was no moment of like, you know, I'm woman, hear me roar, you know, anywhere in this movie. It was just a badass character.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it just portrayed women as fucking people. Go figure.
I know.
You know what I mean? That's something that so many movies just forget to do or intentionally don't do. But, you know, just to convey that we've got this superhero, and she's just a superhero. It's not like she's just a woman or anything like that. She's just a person and kicking ass.
Good, good, good. I like to hear that. That's our thought. I agree. I agree with Wonder Woman. Any last thoughts on Wonder Woman before we move on?
There was one scene that I really feel like they could have – they had a missed opportunity on.
Okay.
And it was the scene when she – it was implied that her and Chris Pine got down. You know, they didn't show it. It was implied. But I really feel like I really wanted to see Chris Pine limping the next day. I just feel like that would have been more appropriate.
Jeremy, did you want to see that?
I think that would have been pretty funny. That would have been good. But I feel like they didn't do that for the same reason that they didn't actually have her drink that beer.
Oh yeah. We got an ice cream scene instead.
When they brought her the beer, like, she never took a drink out of it and just put it down. Which I thought was a very interesting and, you know, kind of funny way for them to approach it, because I always kind of view her as very much like the to me, she's kind of the equivalent of like what Thor is in the Marvel universe. You know, he's the how many thousands of year old warrior who's, you know, been around forever, you know, super great fighter. Yeah. So I kind of view her as that. And so it was interesting to, you know, with as much as that guy likes to party, to see her just put the beer down and not drink it.
Yeah, she kind of rides this interesting line of being like half Captain America, half Thor.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see. You know, I know that why they did that. They didn't want to have anything suggestible or anything like that in the movie. And I support that. But I just felt like it was the one thing where I was like, oh, are they going to do this? When that scene was coming up, I was like, oh, my God, is Chris Pine going to be walking funny? And I was a little disappointed that they didn't go there.
All right. Well, if that was the only gripe or main – one of the only gripes minus the last 50 minutes, it's still a pretty damn good movie.
It's not even a gripe, because it probably would have been really stupid, but I couldn't help but think of that joke.
Well, good, good, good. Well, go see Wonder Woman. It's the one to see for sure. Go see it like Jeremy. Go see it more than once. I hope to see it again as well, too, in the big theater. But we'll move on. Let's do some news. Let's talk about this Dread movie. I recently reviewed the 4K they put out, that Dread film from 2012 with Carl Urban on 4K, and it looks amazing. It sounds amazing. They finally did it right, because the former Blu-ray that came out was terrible looking, but they cleaned everything up, and it looks good. And I feel like Dredd from 2012 with Carl Urban was a Dredd movie we really wanted to see, you know, for a long time. It was so much fun. And I guess since it didn't do all that well at the box office, they're not doing a sequel. However, it has been said, it has been confirmed that Dredd is coming out as a TV series. And that's about all we know. Actually, it's going to be called Judge Dredd Mega City 1, which is like that, you know, crazy city and all those high rises that we saw in the 2012 film. But that's all we know right now. There's not a network. There's no actors cast yet. But what do you guys think? Do you think Dredd deserves to be back in the limelight as a TV series?
I'll let Jeremy address that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love for it to be. I would love to have a nice 13-hour, you know, Netflix thing. I would really. I don't know how much actual Judge Dredd you're going to get in this, because supposedly what it's supposed to be is going to be a little more of like you're going to see a like, you know, kind of background judges. So you're going to get a lot of characters in this movie. And I guess the guy that's producing it knows Carl Urban pretty well. So he's actually going to talk to him to see about getting him to appear on the show. So it might be that you really only get Judge Dredd kind of like beginning, middle and end type of deal.
Okay. Well, I mean, what's it called? It's, I mean, the show is called Judge Dredd, so I'd imagine that it has to center around him. However, like you said, I think, it being a 13-hour series, perhaps they're going to, they just can't follow him around the whole time. There are going to be other characters, which is cool because in the Sylvester Stallone one and this other one, we really only get Dredd and like just people he kind of comes in contact with, not a history or other judges that might be as cool or if not cooler than Dredd actually is. So yeah, I'm excited about this. I really am. And I think Netflix is the one to do it. Do you want to see a hardcore R version or do you want to see kind of like a PG-13 version?
Is that a real question?
I mean... Yeah, it's a real question. I mean,
why would anyone rather see a PG-13 version? That's what I would rather know, unless you're some kind of religious zealot, perhaps.
Well, I mean, I can see the PG-13 because it would get a bigger audience, as well as if they went a hard R one, it could go into, you know, very vulgar, dark, brooding territory, which might hinder its watchability.
What I think happens with that. Everybody that wants this show are people that loved the Carl Urban Dredd movie.
Okay.
Right. That was a pretty hard R right there with your violence. If you go PG-13, you lose all those people.
Really?
Like, yep. Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, a few might watch it. Like, I would watch it. But, you know.
Yeah, I agree. If it comes out hard R, I will be fully on board with it. But if it comes out PG-13, I won't give
a that would be shit like Netflix all of a sudden making a Daredevil series with less violence and sex.
All right, I can see your point. I'm just curious if you what you would rather see. The creators, the showrunners that are going to be in charge of this, they've said that they're going to dive much deeper into the comic book mythology of the whole future dystopia. And the characters, and they also said some of the fan favorites of the comics, character-wise, will be in this new series. Which, I gotta say, it's been a while since I've read any of the Dredd comics, so I'm gonna have to read back up on them. Have you read them, Jeremy?
I've read some, but not very much. I actually have been meaning to kind of dive into them a little bit.
Yeah, I'm curious on how that they will do that. I mean... This is not a show for network television, like ABC, NBC, Fox. You don't want this show on there. You really want like Hulu, Netflix, HBO, Stars, or even AMC would do a good job with it, I would imagine. You all agree with that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I was thinking that was the first thing that came to my mind when I heard about the show. I was like, man, I hope it goes to a... channel or a distributor that will actually be able to put out good content and not have its arms tied behind its back.
Yeah, I mean, I know like there was a while where there was one time where Carl Urban was at a Comic-Con and he answered a question and said that the people that were trying to put it together were meeting with both Netflix and Amazon.
Nice.
Very cool.
So
yeah, I can see that being excellent.
So Carl Urban, of course, we want him to play Judge Dredd, and he's been in sci-fi TV shows as well, like recently. So he's not a stranger to doing television. He's not just in the big feature films. But if worse comes to worse and they can't get Carl Urban for this, is there anybody who's just you're biting to see play Dredd?
No.
Yeah, not really.
There's not one person like, oh, that would be awesome.
I'll be honest when I say that my level of interest in Judge Dredd is pretty low.
So not a fan.
I like the Carl Urban movie. It was good. It was fun.
Okay.
But I liked it because it was a good action movie that was a hard R. That was why I liked it. I don't really care that much about the character or the mythos or anything like that.
Okay. Do you think Rob Schneider should have a cameo in the series?
I think Rob Schneider should have a cameo in every series.
Ugh. Sorry I asked it.
You can do it, Judge Dredd.
And Jeremy, like anybody you want to see play Dredd besides Urban?
No, man, Urban would be my choice. I mean, for the most part, as long as you, I mean, you don't have to like find. It's not going to be super tough, I don't think, to find somebody. He was awesome, but I mean, as long as they follow the same thing where you never see him take off the helmet.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know.
As long as he's got a good voice and a commanding presence.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, let's move on from Dredd. We hope to hear some news about that very soon and that it gets the right network or the right pay subscription network to buy it so we can get hard R Dredd without Rob Schneider, Mr. Atterbury.
you are mistaken. Rue the day.
Well, let's move on. Who had the idea for video game soundtracks?
That was me.
All right. So I'm a big soundtrack lover, and I mean, of course, movie soundtracks are one of my favorite things in the world. Besides this Mediocrity podcast, which you can find on iTunes under the Multimedia Men. But video game soundtracks might be even more popular than movie soundtracks, oddly enough, or at least they're more iconic. People can like, if you sing a movie soundtrack versus a video game soundtrack, I bet you 9 times out of 10, everybody will get the video game soundtrack right over the movie soundtrack.
Unless it's John Williams, in which case that supersedes all.
Yeah. You never know. I mean, maybe Star Wars, but any other John Williams,
Indiana Jones, Jaws,
E.T.,
Superman.
I disagree with you there. I bet you if you tried to sing the theme song to Superman versus the Super Mario Brothers theme song video game, more people would know the Super Mario more than the Superman.
I think that depends greatly on the age bracket of the audience.
Everybody knows Super Mario, man.
Dude, I could sing the Super Mario Brothers theme to my mom, and she would have no fucking idea what that song is.
Da-da-da-da. Okay.
That's not even the Mario theme that you just sang.
No, it's not. I realized that as I was singing. But
maybe you just proved your own point. Why don't you sing the Superman theme song, and we'll see which one you execute off the top of your head better.
Da, 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 da.
And you have just proved John's point.
Case closed, motherfucker.
And the podcast is over.
No, but theme songs all the way from Atari to the original Nintendo, all the way up now to the PS4 and Xbox One. I mean, it's a big part of the game. And it's just like movies, I think. I think that soundtracks and these orchestrated music sessions just really bring life to film and to video games completely. They add that missing mojo to it all. You agree?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so let's go through some. Like, give me some examples of some, like, really awesome video game soundtracks.
Well, I think the first one that we need to talk about is the one that started it all with Super Mario Brothers.
All right. Well,
that was the one you were just talking about. So we might as well talk about the impact that that soundtrack had on video games as a whole.
And it's like, da 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 ba 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 ba. That one, right?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, I could sing that in my sleep, which I failed just a few seconds ago at it.
You can sing it in your sleep.
So, yeah, I mean, that honestly, every Mario game that has ever come out, except for, like, you know, before they were Mario games, they've all had just brilliant soundtracks. The melodies that were written for the original Mario trilogy for NES, as well as, you know, Mario 64 or Super Mario World for any SNES, just amazing, catchy songs that are so much fun, and just, especially when you consider the limitations of the technology that they were writing those melodies for, it's so good.
And those are pretty hard to play too, right? Like if you were to play that on a guitar or a piano, that's like a lot to do, I would feel like, you know, to get the whole sound in.
If you were trying to do it all with two hands on a piano, it'd probably be a massive pain in the butt. And guitar, probably way worse.
All right. So yeah, Koji Kondo was a composer of the original Super Mario Brothers way back when, in 1985. Good God. Were you even born, Atterbury, then?
I was -1 year.
-1 year. How old was Jeremy in 1985?
7.
All right. Good stuff. No, yeah, Super Mario, that, I mean, and they, you had, like, the main theme, you had the, like, the tunnel theme of that do-do-do-do-do-do, and then you had the underwater theme, and then you had, like, the main boss stages themes, which were, they're so good, like, that, they make you, like, get, like, tense up that you, like, start to make mistakes. Oh, so good.
So, and the fact that they also synced up the soundtrack to the time remaining on the game. So if you only had 30 seconds left or something along those lines, it would speed up and go into, like, double time, basically. Yeah. Which would way crank up the stress factor.
Which, that's pretty cool for back then. That's pretty badass.
Yeah, it was really great. And they really, the soundtracks just got better with each game.
I agree. I'm gonna have to talk about another one that came out around the same time. The Zelda theme songs that dun, dun, ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba, da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, I have learned that sheet music on clarinet, and that is very difficult to play.
I imagine so.
I haven't played it, so I don't know how well you executed that vocally.
I think that you were missing little blocks of the melody. You were kind of skipping ahead 5 seconds after each line, but it was there. It was close enough.
You know, people know this. I'm doing my best on this media.
I think you're close enough.
Okay, all right. So those were the original ones. I mean, a lot of people would probably say that 1998's Ocarina of Time, The Legend of Zelda, was probably the best out of all the Zelda games. Do you agree?
That's on my list, man. As great as all the Zelda game soundtracks were, to me, the Ocarina of Time, Ocarina, however you want to pronounce it, was absolutely the pinnacle of Zelda gaming, and the score was so good.
Which you must know that the same guy, Koji Kondo, who did Super Mario Brothers, also did Ocarina of Time. Composed that.
And it's brilliant. That guy is just so good at creating these, just like John Williams, man. Those two guys are, you know, he's the John Williams of video gaming, because everything is so memorable. You can just sit and hum it, and the moment you hear it, you know exactly what you want to sing along with it. It's perfect.
Very, very, very cool. Jeremy, any video game soundtrack that really sticks in your mind that you love?
I remember enjoying the soundtrack on the first few Mass Effect games a lot, although, like, you know, I remember it fitting really well with the game, but I don't remember there being any kind of really discernible Mass Effect theme. But for me, the best, you know, for the modern stuff, and I've really played a lot of the Nintendo things, but I gotta probably just go with Halo.
And I very much agree with you. the choir section in the background and just that celestial feeling of it, oh, was so good.
And even a lot of this stuff kind of, and I don't remember much of the first Halo soundtrack, but from kind of like Halo 2 forward, even a lot of the kind of background music was just really well executed.
All right, all right. That's good. And Jonathan, what other ones you got on your plate?
I got a whole list, man. A whole list.
Give me a list. Give me a list. Give me a list in which each one give me like a very short answer as why.
All right, so I just wrote this list based on the first things that occurred to me. So we might say that this is kind of in order of which ones were most important. So Ocarina of Time was number one, and Halo Combat Evolved was number two, because that just was so fantastic, and it, you know, felt so epic with the choral work. So good. Mario Brothers, number three. And the Pokemon Blue and Red soundtrack also, because wow, that also had so many catchy themes, and it was in the same 8-bit kind of soundtrack that we had for all those old games. So really, really catchy stuff. After that, Castlevania Symphony of the Night. I know I talk about it all the time, but it's seriously one of my favorite games.
I was going to ask if Castlevania was on your list. I even like the original Nintendo version too, or the Super Nintendo version.
The original had a really cool score, and, you know, the Super Nintendo Castlevania 4 had a really damn good score, too, all on, like, classic organ, and it was just a really haunting theme. But once we got along to the 32-bit Symphony of the Night goodness, where they could actually have more music, it was so creepy. And just the intro screen, when you're just there listening to the choral stuff, it's so creepy, so perfectly 90s. I love it. Yeah. After that, Mass Effect. I will say that the original Mass Effect trilogy has one of the best soundtracks ever. Right. Dragon Age Origins,
okay,
another BioWare game. That game has so much fun stuff, and they did such a great job of creating a score that actually felt medieval and felt like a fantasy score. So great. Skyrim after that, because, man, those are some epic sounds that we got from that score. Just some really fun stuff. And they also did a fantastic job of capturing that Viking, Nordic kind of powerful sound. And last on the list is Final Fantasy VII.
All right. Final Fantasy VII. All right, cool.
Some majorly catchy stuff in there. And it was just a great, exciting score.
Well, all right. That's good. Jeremy, any other ones from you?
No, I was working when we got the list of things we were going to put together, so I didn't really have time to throw anything together.
I'm trying to remember if there was a good one from any of the Marvel Capcom or Destiny or the card game we used to play, Twisted Metal.
I don't remember Twisted Metal having it. Destiny kind of loses points for me with that terrible Paul McCartney song that rolls through the credits.
Yeah. The Marvel versus Capcom stuff was terrible, in my opinion. Those have had notoriously horrible soundtracks.
All right. All right. I'm going to have to say, in addition to the ones mentioned, Tetris was always a fun one, and the original Sonic the Hedgehog was always a fun one. And can I mention Mortal Kombat? Like, even the song, Mortal Kombat!
That was from the movie.
Okay, so not the game.
Well, yeah, the game didn't really have that great of a soundtrack, but the song you're singing is from the movie.
Okay, all right. I wanted to see if I could sneak that in there.
No, denied.
Denied, damn it. Let's see. Yeah, but those two were really good. You know what? I'm going to go Friday the 13th, the original Nintendo game. Damn good. I love that game, and I will always defend that game. Everybody shits on it. I love it. I love that game, and I love the music in that game, too. But, yeah, they've released, like, Tekken records recently, like video game Tekken record soundtracks. Interesting enough.
Nice.
So I've only played one Tekken game in my life, and that was a long time ago. So, but yeah, I definitely agree with you. The Castlevania, I wish, don't you wish kind of like, if we're playing, like, the new Halo or maybe Destiny 2, that there would be an option for, like, an 8-bit sound that you can, like, just switch on and off from.
I think that that would be a weird match with Destiny 2. But I think that I like that there are some games that come out nowadays that you can get for Xbox Live where they are just are 8-bit or 8-bit or 16-bit games with the matching score.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, very cool. Those are video game soundtracks. There's a lot of good ones. And now it just makes me want to go play all these old games now. My goodness. Oh, F-Zero was an excellent soundtrack to a video game. Oh, my goodness. How did I forget F-Zero? Did Star Fox...
One that also pops in my mind is Cruisin' World for Nintendo 64.
So Cruisin' World is the car game, right?
Yeah, Cruisin' World is a car game. It was the sequel to Cruisin' USA.
Which is the arcade, yeah.
Yeah, but the soundtrack was totally silly, and if you listen to it nowadays, it's almost laughable. But I remember thoroughly enjoying it at the time.
All right. All right, all right. I like it. I like it a lot. All right. Well, let's move on to our next segment. So, a bunch of movie theaters now, particularly Alamo Drafthouse, love to do special screenings and special events with movies. And this past weekend, they showed a Kurt Russell movie marathon. Now, supposedly this was their second one. However, we'll just go off of this one. And the movies they picked were interesting to me. The Kurt Russell movie marathon they showed was Big Trouble in Little China, Overboard, Backdraft, Tango and Cash, and The Thing. I think we could do better than that, don't you?
In some ways.
In some way, yeah. There's a couple on there that are pretty damn good. So, first off, what do you like about Kurt Russell? And do you think he's one of the coolest people on the planet?
Yes.
Is he right up there with Harrison Ford for you? Like, right, like a step, a notch under or, like, equal?
No.
Okay. Close, even?
I think that not close to Harrison Ford, because that's just ridiculous, but he's very cool nonetheless.
Jeremy, do you feel the same way?
Absolutely.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like Kurt Russell might be cooler than Harrison Ford.
I think that you are just saying that to piss me off.
I actually do agree with Kurt Russell being cooler than Harrison Ford.
I think
Ford.
This might be worse than your Mace Windu theory.
Yeah.
This holds less water.
This is just asinine.
The jury's still out, you know? We don't know yet about the Mace Windu thing yet. It'll be proven soon enough. But I do think Kurt Russell is a damn cool dude in general and a damn cool and great actor. So if you were to throw your own movie marathon somewhere with Kurt Russell films, how would you change this list up?
First of all, what's wrong with this list? How does this list different from the previous one?
I actually don't know. I don't know what the first one was. I don't know.
Because I would imagine this list is probably just not the exact same Kurt Russell marathon all over again.
I mean, it's hard to think that you would do a Kurt Russell movie without Big Trouble in Little China and The Thing in it. But the other three movies are, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Tango and Cash, but the other two, I just feel, I don't know, there's other movies that I would love to see here. So, I mean, would you change this up? Would you not? If you had your option to do a Kurt Russell movie marathon, what would it be?
I don't know. For me, I feel like if you're going to have, I feel like some movies are, you know, to a certain degree can be interchangeable. Like, I feel like if you're going to have Big Trouble in Little China, you don't need Escape from New York or Escape from L.A.
Okay. And what's the reason? Just because it's Carpenter, kind of like the same
vibe?
Yeah,
you know, a little too much of the same thing.
Okay. All right. So which ones would you pick?
I don't know. I'm actually cool with that list. I mean, it's been so long since I've seen The Thing, I don't really remember it.
Okay. You got to watch that again.
I'd probably just keep that list as it is.
All right. Well, Jeremy says he can keep that list as it is. He likes it. Jonathan, what do you think?
I would definitely swap out Big Trouble in Little China because I fucking hate that movie.
You are the weirdest man alive. How do you hate Big Trouble in Little China? I mean, did I say China?
In Little what?
Little China. I just got flustered there because he said it was the worst movie ever made. Little China, not Gina. Which is going to play all sorts of really great if certain people listen to this podcast, because
yeah,
I have a friend whose little sister is named Gina, so, or Gina, but we call her Gine. So that's good, but how, first...
So what you're saying is you're going to give us a casting for Big Trouble in Little Gina?
Yes, I am. Yes, I
Go
am.
Go ahead.
I can't.
Now's good.
No, now's not good.
I disagree.
No, I want to...
John agrees with me. I already know it.
Oh, God. I want to find out why Atterbury hates such an excellent movie like Big Trouble in Little China so much.
I think it just didn't work for me. I don't know. I didn't watch that movie when I was young, and I think that movie's got to be a lot of nostalgia factor, in which case I understand why people who did like it when it was new would like it now. But I didn't see it when it was new, and I tried to watch it a couple, like 2 months ago, and I literally turned it off after about 25 minutes because I just couldn't stand it.
So you've never seen the whole movie?
No, I haven't, but what I saw was a fucking travesty.
No, it wasn't. You need to see the whole movie, man. Oh, my goodness. You've got to see the whole movie because it's one of the best movies ever made.
That is probably not true.
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
That simply can't be true.
We're going to – you and I are going to watch this. We're going to watch it somehow. You're going to watch it. Be homework.
So I think even if you made a list of the 100 best films of all time, would you really include that movie in that list?
Yes.
And then 100 best films of all time.
All time. All time, sir. Movie was
That's
ahead
like
of its time.
Including Baby Hit Me One More Time in the 100 best albums of all time.
Not true.
That yeah, it is.
I just can't believe you hate it so much that you even finished. You only got 20 minutes. There's so many good characters in it.
I felt like the same way I did when I was watching the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie.
I mean, I could see that in a way, but not Big Trouble in Little China, man. So good in every way, shape, or form.
So I would swap that movie out, definitely.
All right, so what movies, if you had to do your own Kurt Russell movie marathon, what would you do?
Well, I like Overboard. I think Overboard's a really funny movie, and I like it because he gets to show off his comedic side well in that movie. And, of course, I love The Thing. That's a fantastic horror movie. I do not like Tango and Cash that much. And
Blasphemy.
I've never seen Backdraft.
Okay. So what movies would you replace them with?
Well, okay. So I thought Bone Tomahawk was so damn good. I would love to see that one in there because to me, Bone Tomahawk was just a fucking incredible movie.
Okay.
Easily one of the most unique and awesome horror movies of the recent decade.
All right.
Tombstone.
Tombstone is damn good.
Need I say more? Tombstone would absolutely have to be in there. And I'm also going to include 3,000 Miles to Graceland.
Which was a fun movie.
Really fun movie. That's probably it's easily one of my favorite action movies of his.
Interesting.
And
okay.
Yeah, I mean that's about it. Captain Ron's pretty good.
So my list was going to definitely include Captain Ron. Cuz damn, that movie's excellent.
Yeah, it is.
There's no other movie like Captain Ron other than Captain Ron.
Fun little factoid for the listeners here. Kurt Russell actually was in Tombstone. I mean, I'm sorry, not Tombstone, goddammit. He was in Forrest Gump.
That is very true. And what part did he play that he...
He did the unpictured voice of young Elvis Presley.
Correct. And then when he did 3,000 Miles to Graceland.
Yeah. Go figure.
Go figure. I was like, bitch, everybody know he in Tombstone.
I said it, and I was like, wait, I said the wrong thing, didn't I?
So just before I go on, I just want to say that Executive Decision is better than Air Force One.
Okay.
I just wanted to see your reaction to that.
You can say it. Doesn't mean it's fucking true.
Ugh. Ugh, come on. All right. So back in 1992, the same year Captain Wrong came out. Actually, you know what? I'm not going to do that one. I'm going to do one that he did a few years later. A movie Kurt Russell did in 1997 called Breakdown, which was so good and pretty terrifying, too. Did y'all remember that movie?
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Breakdown was a movie where Kurt Russell and his wife were going somewhere, and these crazy truckers kidnapped his wife, and he had to, like, go find her and, like, kill everybody. It was badass. And I think it was, like, a very underrated movie. Not a lot of people really saw it, but I thought that was a really cool movie, and I'd like to see that in this marathon of Kurt Russell, because he's just so good. And you know what? I mean, do y'all remember the movie Sky High?
Never saw it.
Oh, it's excellent, excellent film. He's not the main part in it, but he's in it quite a bit, and he's great. He plays a superhero, which was really good, but it's more into the kid thing. Bruce Campbell's in the movie, too. Bruce Campbell and Kurt Russell in the same movie, Sky High. They were also in Escape from L.A. as well. They're like the same – well, they're not the same person because Bruce Campbell is amazing. So, yeah, I think that's what I would do. If you haven't seen Breakdown, highly recommend it. It's really good. John, you should see Backdraft for sure. That's a really good movie.
Okay.
It's a Ron Howard movie.
Yeah, I've never seen that one. It totally flew under my radar. I guess it came out in like 91, though, didn't it?
Yeah, 91, 92, something like that.
Yeah, so I was 5.
Pretty good. And there was also a really cool movie that I remember seeing back in the theater back in the day. It was called Unlawful Entry. And it's about Kurt Russell and his wife, Madeline Stowe, who are stalked by an evil police officer played by Ray Liotta.
I remember that movie.
Yeah, I liked that movie. I thought that was really good, and he did a really good job with it, too. Kurt Russell's awesome, and I could literally watch all of his movies, especially Big Trouble in Little China, from start to finish every day of every year. You don't believe me, do you?
I absolutely believe you.
He just doesn't care.
He needs to care. He needs to see this.
I tried for you guys. I really did. We had talked about it in some other episode because it gets brought up a lot. But I tried watching it. I just couldn't get behind it.
I got to agree with him, man. It's a nostalgia movie.
Hmm. All right.
It's like those old fucking Ninja Turtle movies.
Hey, the first two Ninja Turtle movies are damn good. 3, not so much. But those first two are still quite fun. No, don't agree?
No.
I agree, but I do think that they're probably largely nostalgia, but I love those movies.
Okay. All right. Well, do you want to hear some Kevin Hart, Dwayne Johnson suggestions, and we can decide if we really want to see it or not?
Sure.
Sure?
Hey, let's hear it. Let's hear 2.
All right. Mitchell Blumka, he wants to see Kevin Hart as Blade and Dwayne Johnson as Kris Kristofferson's character in a new Blade movie.
Okay.
You'd be down?
I'm always down.
Jeremy?
No, I'd rather have The Rock play a giant vampire.
Okay.
I don't want to watch The Rock play an old guy that just sits around and doesn't really do much.
All right. The other one I liked was a remake of Ghost with The Rock as Patrick Swayze and Kevin Hart as Whoopi Goldberg's character who can see dead people. What do you think? You're not giving me anything here. Come on. What do you think about these things?
Oh, I think that's great. I like it.
I would pay to see that movie.
Of course. Who wouldn't?
Would you believe that Dwayne Johnson could get killed like that in the street by some guy?
No, unless he was hit by a tank, something along those lines.
Okay. All right. All right.
After getting shot a bunch and then maybe run over by a bus.
All right. Well, maybe that's how it happened. Maybe that's how it has to happen. That's how it has
or,
to happen.
Or, you know, paper. I think that's probably his one weakness, right?
Yeah, that might be it. So, oh, any lasting thoughts on this episode this week?
I gotta say, I just tried to rewatch Salem's Lot.
Oh, I love that movie. That movie still scares me.
Yeah, I don't love that movie. I tried to watch it, and I wanted to like it, but it was pretty horrible. Dude, it's horrible. It's just like the It movie. It's just like that. They're both borderline unwatchable. Because the books are for both of those are so good, but I feel like both with the It movie and Salem's Lot movie, you know, Stephen King's writing is all about people, and it's all about the real thoughts that people have and their feelings and all of those kinds of things. That's what his book are all about. That, but these movies completely lost that to the point where the characters are just there to push the story along and just to move you from scene to scene, and that's not what it's about at all. It completely becomes vanilla at that point.
Okay. I don't know about that. I don't believe you, and I don't agree.
Jeremy, have you watched the It or Salem's Lot movies?
I don't think so.
I would be interested to see what you would think of it from new eyes. But they're, you know, the monster from Salem's Lot, the vampire, is a great-looking vampire, but it's mainly just an updated version of Nosferatu, you know?
Well, of course it is. I will give you Stephen King's It, the original TV series. The only good parts still with that are Tim Curry as Pennywise.
Yeah.
But with Salem's Lot, I think it holds up still.
Yeah, I couldn't get into it. I watched probably an hour and a half, because it's also a very long movie. It's like 2 hours and 45 minutes or something along those lines.
Correct.
And see, I watched about half of it, and I just was like, okay, I'm just going to go to bed.
Oh, my goodness.
Just wasn't feeling it, man. It was just a hollow story.
All right. Jeremy, anything to add?
I watched The Frontier on Netflix, and that was kind of fun.
What is that about?
It's Jason Momoa way back in the day, early America up in Canada, like hunting pelts and killing people with hatchets. It's pretty awesome.
Does he show any sign of Aquaman or Khal Drogo in that show?
He does not breathe underwater in this TV show.
Well, damn it.
Does he kill people from horses?
I don't know if they I don't remember if they show him riding a horse or not, but man, he's got a pretty legit body count in this TV show.
Cool.
Is it really gruesome?
Yeah, it's pretty brutal, pretty violent, and it's only like 6 or 8 episodes, so there's no there's not really a lot of lull. It's just hopping right in and kicking asses.
All right, I'll give that one a shot. It's been on my list for a while now.
Yeah, I started it on a whim, and it was pretty good, and I pretty much blew through it over the weekend.
Well, I'll have to watch it.
I made a pretty good dent in the new season of House of Cards this weekend also, and that's very good so far.
Me too. I'm, I think, 5 episodes in, and damn, it's pretty good.
Yep.
I like it. I would agree. I do. I'm with you there. We'll wait to talk about that when we see it all. I'm curious on how it is. And then my lasting thing to say is that over these past, 45 episodes, both Jeremy and Jonathan have asked me to play Star Wars Battlefront. Well, as of these past week, I downloaded it all and played with them Star Wars Battlefront. And I must say, it's a damn fun game. Although, it's so buggy, especially in menus and loading time. And it just seems like it's way too many steps to get into a game and find friends and all sorts of shit. But once you're in gameplay, it's pretty damn fun.
So would you say that there are things that you like about it and things that you hate about it?
Yes.
Yep, we're all on the same page.
So I think I'm at like level 4 or 5 right now. So I'm still a young Padawan. So I hope to get.
Is that like an Irish Padawan?
A Padawan? Did I say Padawan or Padawan?
You said Padawan.
I'm sorry.
Look, I'm just impressed that you actually used the word correctly, even though you didn't pronounce it right.
Baby steps, baby
steps.
That's
the thing I'm the most surprised about. I don't care if you messed up the word. I'm just impressed you used it right.
Oh, good. Well, with the baby steps, I'm getting there. Well, there's hope for me yet.
I'd like to point out that that's prequel knowledge and not original trilogy.
Oh, really?
I think it's probably just because we've called him a Padawan so many times.
Is that a prequel thing?
Yeah.
Oh.
Here's what we're going to do. The next quiz is going to be prequel related, and I'll bet he scores higher on it than he does original trilogy. Next week, that's what's going down.
Oh, my gosh. I'm in.
And then you will be so ashamed, man. We're going to disown you.
Why did this happen? All right. So next week, we will do a Star Wars prequel quiz for myself, and hopefully I don't get any right. That's going
to
be...
But you have to answer them honestly. You can't throw the questions because you don't want to give away the fact that you're a Hayden Christensen super fan.
Well, of course I won't. Of course I won't do that. I won't do that. We'll answer honestly, because I'm thinking of it now. I'm like, how could that possibly ring true? But it might. I'm not happy about it. I'm not. But yeah, I'm playing.
We won't make you show your Jake Lloyd tattoo on the internet.
Oh God. Jake Lloyd's a saint. So yeah, I'm playing that and it's fun. So hopefully we'll play some more here this week.
We should
on Xbox. So that will be fun. But yeah, until next week, we are Mediocrity on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Look us up under the Multimedia Men podcast. We love you all and we will see you soon. Thank you.